Today, I'm going to talk to a professional in the world of penny stocks. Now, I know this may surprise you because this is a troubled area for investors and advisors like me steer away from them because there are just so many scammers operating in this arena. My next guest reports that even in his research, 95% of penny stocks are not good investments. However, he does think there is great opportunity in the remaining 5%. So let's learn about that and meet him. His name is Peter Leeds, and he's the author of Penny Stocks for Dummies and Invest in Penny Stocks, published by John Wiley & Sons. And he's also a contract writer for Forbes. So he comes to us from legitimate sources. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks a lot for having me here, Steve.
So penny stocks, you must feel like Sisyphus, you know, constantly rolling that rock up the hill only to see it fall down again. You're constantly preaching to an audience that maybe doesn't care for your message. What is your experience trying to get this word out about penny stocks?
Well, I'm definitely swimming against the current, I'll say that, and for good reason. I mean, most penny stocks are bad investments, and everybody has sort of dabbled in penny stocks and been burned by them, and so I'm trying to re-educate people that there are a small percentage of companies that are trading as penny stocks that are actually good investments, good quality management, good quality, you know, revenue streams and all that. And if they can find that, you know, 5% out of the thousands of them, then they tend to do pretty well. And other than that, maybe people should avoid most penny stocks.
How do you define a penny stock? What is a penny stock?
A penny stock is any stock that is $5 per share or less. So you get lots of companies like Ford Motor Company, which you don't think of Ford when you think of penny stocks, but it was a penny stock for a while. And so that fell under our radar. We researched it. We said, you know, yeah, GM's going bankrupt, but we think this is a good quality company. And Ford turned around and went up to 14 bucks or something like that. That's the type of company, anything $5 and under. So it actually broadens the potential targets for penny stock investors.
So you have the companies that are growing and aspiring, kind of on the way up, and then you have the fallen angels, and I'm thinking, for example, Kodak would be a great example of a company that was a blue chip at one time and then went into penny stock status only to disappear. And then you have those companies that during crises may go down below $5 like a Ford.
Yeah, exactly. And I would add to that companies that are brand new that have, you know, five employees and they just got started, but they're on the upswing, the revenues are increasing, their market share is increasing. And those are the type of companies that, you know, they may go from, you know, 25 cents to several dollars a share if you, you know, like I said, you find the right ones and they're healthy as a company.
You know, I want to get to the positives that you see in this, you know, sector of the penny stock world, but I want to get the negatives out on the table. One statement you made in your book is that penny stocks are a victim of their own popularity because of their potential for great financial gain. They draw many naive investors who fall for all the hoopla. What is it about penny stocks that make it a very difficult market to be successful in?
People are too quick to use it as a get-rich-quick channel. You know, they have a little bit of money and they want to make the most out of that money. And they think, okay, I'll risk my $300 and then I'll turn it to several thousand.
Yeah.
That is the absolute way to start to approach penny stocks. And generally, that'll make you more vulnerable to falling victim to one of these scams or one of these people that are, you know, giving misleading information just to get people to invest in the stock.
Yeah, there's
you have to go about it, just like you said earlier, you have to look at them as if you were analyzing blue chip companies and they just happen to be smaller and you find the good ones that have, you know, less to worry about. And they typically, some of the good ones can do pretty darn well.
So they're hard to buy and sell, you say, because there's not a lot of shares outstanding necessarily sometimes?
Some of them are harder to buy and sell. I mean, we mitigate that by avoiding any, you know, if we talk about stocks that we like, we're avoiding companies that are trading on the pink sheets or that are very thinly traded. We're looking for companies that actually have a pretty good following, and those won't be very difficult to buy and sell. A lot of them are on, you know, NASDAQ or the over-the-counter bulletin board market, and they're pretty easy to get involved with, and when you want to take your profits, pretty easy to walk away from.
You mentioned something about, you know, scams before, and we know that history is littered with, you know, people who have tried to take advantage of the naive, especially when it comes to investments in Wall Street. Give me an example of some of the scams that we would run up against as a penny stock investor.
Well, you've probably seen them yourself, Steve. I've seen them all the time. People are sending out mail-outs or unsolicited emails, or they have sort of what looks to be a professional newsletter online, but they're telling you very misleading information about the company they're talking about. They're saying this company is going to find gold and here's why. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and so basically there are people who are naive, don't know better, are reading this stuff and getting excited. And, you know, some people, you know, they need their money, but they believe in this. It looks legitimate and they wind up putting money into what are basically scam companies or very misleading information about companies. And, you know, I get pretty upset about that and people fall for this stuff every day.
Also, this idea that a lot of the research that you may see online is puffed up. It's actually biased because perhaps the analyst is getting paid by the company to produce something positive. So you're not exactly dealing with, you know, information that's free of conflict of interest.
That is exactly right. I mean, there's people who are saying, trying to get as many people as they can to buy this company that they are putting in the best light. But at the same time, they own millions of shares that they bought for a fraction of a penny.
Yeah.
They're selling those shares into people who are naively buying in. And I mean, I don't know if you've read this part of the, in the book or on my website, but we have a 100% unbiased guarantee that we have a complete commitment that we are not going to be, you know, holding shares in the companies that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Peter Leeds. He is the author of Penny Stocks for Dummies and Invest in Penny Stocks. And we're examining this kind of shady area of the marketplace to see if there are diamonds in the rough, in fact, or there is a systematic, disciplined way for finding great investment opportunities if you do your homework. I guess these shares, too, are quite volatile as well, right? So that makes them difficult for people to hang on to, especially when they're faced with these kinds of companies that don't have a lot of public data about them.
Exactly. And I mean, you're going to get a lot more volatility the smaller the stock is or lower the price. You know, the smaller something is, the less information it's going to take to move it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're looking at companies, not stocks. And any analysis research we do, any analysis or research individual on their own does, they should be looking at the company. And this is a company going in the right direction. Is the revenue increasing? Is the management team good? At which point the stock will follow suit.
Yeah. So if you're interested in this area and you buy this book, Penny Stock for Dummies, there's a lot of chapters devoted to what to avoid. And I like that about this book because there's no easy money in this world. It all takes work. It all takes education. It takes discipline. It takes practice. And those elements are highlighted in the book. And then once you've understood those and you're ready, he's got some ways we're going to talk about in a minute to start off slow and to get your feet wet so you can kind of get the right education without losing too much money. Peter, who should invest in penny stocks?
Well, that's a great question. If you invest in the right kinds of stocks in the right way, then there's a lot of people who it would be appropriate for. But I'm not going to say, you know, who should and shouldn't. Typically, penny stocks are not for people who have money that they can't lose. Risk money is usually better when you get your feet wet with penny stocks and you have good potential for growth, but you shouldn't be, you know, risking your rent money or your children's education for this stuff.
I suppose you have to have a pretty strong stomach to be a successful investor in this area.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you how I got started. I was 14 years old and I lost all my money in 2 weeks trading penny stocks. And so, you know, that did two things. It made me realize how I had to learn how to do it right, but it also helped me get a stronger stomach for the volatility with this stuff. And what I did is I then took the time to learn how to invest properly, and it led to what, you know, where I came today is to, you know, with Leeds analysis and looking at every aspect of the company. So what was one of the most gut-wrenching moments of my life, it actually was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, that often happens in our lives. That's the way we get kind of a wake-up call that what we're doing is wrong, and you either change or you continue down that errant path. In your book, you talk about investors who can identify and accept areas of concern for a company if they can anticipate improvements in those factors. You mentioned one here, for example, accept the risk. As long as you're aware of the greater perceived risk and are willing to accept it in exchange for greater returns, you can find numerous opportunities. And you go on to say, identify shrinking degrees of risk. So you do have some check boxes, or I guess the Dummies books kind of require that, don't they? That you have these little gray sections in the pages that give you a little checklist?
Yeah, it's part of their format. But it actually, I was pretty impressed with the amount of information that I was able to conduct for people who are reading the book in such a small amount of time. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a really good education, and, you know, people shy away sometimes, like, I'm not a dummy, I'm not going to read that, whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is the absolute best way for somebody to pick up that book, and they're going to read that book and know just about everything I know within a, you know, in a short read.
Years ago, when computers were really starting to take off, I would be in a bookstore and I would be looking at, you know, computers for dummies and computers for idiots or whatever. And my wife once says, so now what are you looking for? Computers for morons? So I got the point. I think that some investors get bored with the idea. They have $10,000 and they buy $100 stock. They can only get 100 shares. And so every point's worth $100. And, you know, it's like, you know, on a percentage wise, maybe the stock is doing well, but they're not just getting a lot of bang for the buck. And they look at low price stocks as maybe a way I can get a lot more shares. And if this thing moves at all, I can make a lot more money. So it represents some type of financial leverage for them. What do you think of that?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, the majority of people who are getting involved with penny stocks, you know, usually they're going to be putting in sometimes hundreds of dollars, maybe a couple thousand, and that's all they have to risk. And they know that if you put that into IBM or something like that, you know, you might wind up making 6%. It's not going to change your life one way or the other.
Yeah.
But they say, okay, I'm willing to risk a little bit for something that I hope will go up in value 5 times, 10 times, and then that'll be a meaningful amount of money. And with the right penny stocks, you know, we've done this before and we're going to do it again. And you just have to get involved with a really good company as it's starting to grow, rather than buying into, you know, J.C. Penney or J.P. Morgan, you know, what might be near the top, and, you know, you're going to have a smaller gain or smaller loss.
Well, you know, I know that John Templeton, the father of mutual funds, Sir John Templeton, as he was eventually called, and really one of the great orators and speakers about the markets, he made his fortune during one very terrible time in the market, where he went in and he bought up all the dollar stocks that he could buy, knowing full well that a certain good percentage were going to go out of business, others would probably muddle along, and there would be just, you know, some percentage, albeit small, that were just going to make a lot of money. And he made his fortune that way. Is that a way of considering this thing, or is that just something that John Templeton should have done?
That is a really good approach to it. It might not be appropriate for everybody. I could see that it would work. You know, our philosophy is, why not go through every single one of those potential penny stocks and find the best ones of those and increase your odds?
My guest is Peter Lee, the author of Penny Stocks for Dummies. So let's get into what you think the first steps are if you decide that this is an area that you want to get into and start to develop. You discuss developing a plan with paper trades. Take us there.
Absolutely. People always ask me, what's the amount of money I should start with? Is it risky? Whatever. You don't have to start with any money. I suggest that you don't. I suggest that you trade stocks with imaginary money on paper. You imagine you had $100,000, for example, and you keep track of which stocks you would have bought if you had been using real money. And until you get that process being profitable for you, I wouldn't put a real dollar into the markets.
Mm-hmm. And I think you also said, you know, don't even set up a spreadsheet on your computer. Just find a piece of paper, maybe in a notebook or something, and write it out.
Literally, it's not, you know, very difficult. It's, you know, you write down, I would have bought today, you know, 10,000 shares of ABC, and then you keep track of it and check back a week later, and you're like, oh, I could have made 20% if I used real money. And you do that for a little while, and you'll find that you're learning a lot, because if you only had, you know, $1,000 to invest, but in paper you had $100,000, you're making a lot more trades. The learning curve is dramatically steepened, and, you know, a month later you can see that you would have made money or you would have lost money, in which case you saved having lost that money.
Yeah, and the very fact that the more experience you're getting and without having the emotional attachment is a very good way to learn. My name is Steve Pomerantz. You're listening to On the Money, and my guest is Peter Leeds, author of Penny Stocks for Dummies. I think this is really interesting stuff. That's an area we really haven't addressed here before on this show. But you said, you know, you watch these stocks, you watch them on paper, and, you know, a couple of weeks they go up by 20%. But you also say in your book that penny stocks are a lot like, you know, companies that are play possum for a while. They won't do anything for years. And people tend to get bored and they move out of them probably at the wrong time. How much is patience part of this process of being successful?
It's absolutely imperative. And I am the worst one for this. I mean, I've bought stocks at 80 cents that have gone down to 40 cents and then stayed there for a couple of years. I keep checking on it, and you want to walk away, but I held on to it because I checked that the company was still doing well. Yeah. The company was still doing good. So what happened was it eventually went up to like $7 or $8, and then I got that payday. But that took 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these stocks are much more volatile, much quicker to make their moves. But sometimes, like I said, you're investing in the company. Sometimes the company needs time to grow and do what it's going to do.
So you've got thousands of stocks out there. I suppose there would be screeners available on the internet where you can put in criteria and it'll winnow down the stocks that fill that criteria to a handful or, 50 or whatever. How does that work in the penny stock world?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's lots of screeners. You could go to, like, even Google has its own screener. There's a few out there. Yeah, and you can eliminate all the stocks that are not in the price range you're looking at. But what we typically do is we'll do a little bit of screen, but then we're going to look at them literally one by one and mm-hmm. just be quick to cross off what we're looking through. We're not going to go near anything that's trading on the pink sheets, for example,
yeah.
or anything that is trading below a certain price, like fractional pennies we get rid of. And that's one way to continually pare down your list. But we literally are, I have a whole team here, so we're going through one by one trying to look into a company. And anything wrong with it, we throw it out right away.
Mm-hmm.
If it looks okay, we put it on another short list. And then mm-hmm. basically, it eventually moves up to the primary short list where we're taking a lot of time.
Yeah, I think if you talk to mutual fund managers or any institutional managers who pick stocks, they have a very similar process. If they're fundamental investors, they'll use their screens, but there's a lot of things those stock screeners won't tell you. We're short on time. You have 5 indications that a penny stock is set to multiply in value. Can you remember all 5?
not right now.
Well, let me help you. Revenue growth is strong and accelerating without equivalent increases in advertising expenses.
Right.
Increasing market share is equivalent to losses in market share among the industry leaders. So you're looking for increasing market share, right?
Yep.
The company currently operates in an industry with high and rising barriers to entry. I mean, we could do a whole show on that.
Oh, yeah.
Customer attrition is low and returning customers increase their average order size. I guess you could also say watch out for those companies that only have a few customers.
Exactly.
And sales are growing by more than 25% a year while operational expenses are growing by 10% or less. There's so many questions I want to ask you, but I do want to ask you one final question.
Sure.
You know how we're always talking about price to earnings ratio as a measure of value? Do PEs matter when it comes to these kinds of stocks?
Typically, they're not going to be producing a net profit early on, especially if they're a newer company or a turnaround. So your PE is not going to be really available to you. But when they do have a PE, generally a penny stock that has a PE of 50 up to 100, that's not out of line because they could be growing so quickly that it is actually appropriate for a really high PE valuation.
Yeah, so don't be scared away by a PE. It's a different world altogether.
Exactly.
The book is Penny Stock for Dummies is another book as well. Invest in penny stocks. If you're into this type of investing, I highly recommend it. My guest is Peter Leeds. He is the author of both of those books. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.